I'm going to start with some slides and then switch over to interactive mode or typing in Windows and that. What I'm planning to do is follow some instructions online about how to reproduce the famous EHG images using Docker as kind of a, or using that as like a motivating case for a time you might want to use Docker. Okay, but I'm going to start with some slides. The slides and some of the things I'm talking about are available on this webpage that you, whose URL is going to be hard to see. It's github.com/bstndstn. That's me. /docker-demo. A little echo on Zoom, maybe.
Oh, sorry.
Ah, it's Eric. Apologies. It's okay. And also the talk slides are actually, my volume sounds a little loud actually to me. PDF is also there if you want to follow along later. I'm going to divert from the talk slides because it goes on for too long. But I'm just gonna start there at least and then switch to like interactive after a little bit. Enter full screen, right? Okay, so yeah, basically you've probably heard of or encountered Docker, and you know, you have to ask, is this just a fad? Should we be paying attention to it, or is it a useful thing for a researcher to consider? And you know, if you go to the Docker webpage, Enterprise Container Platform for High Velocity Innovation, sounds like a fad, sounds like I should ignore it, right? But I think argue that it's worth paying attention to. So, you know, look past some of the buzz. Definitely some of, you know, there's definitely like a lot of buzz and you should be skeptical of those sorts of things, but it's fairly justified, I think. Okay, so just sort of some of the concepts and ideas. Docker is a company that provides tools for containerization. And containerization is basically a bunch of technologies that are in the Linux kernel that are for controlling the environment in which a program runs. And basically the upshot of this is that it lets you kind of package up a lot of things in your environment, like software libraries or scripts and data, package it up in such a way that you can then run that in the same way on different machines. I'm going to argue that's a good thing for scientists to pay attention to, because it's good for practice and it's just good for like saving yourself time. And then basically Docker sits on top of the Linux kernel, and then in order to use it, you basically have to build up the environment that your program wants to use, which sort of includes the whole file system. Skip the last 2 points. Okay, so then operationally, what is a container? It's sort of, there's sort of the static part, which is called an image in Dockerland, which is basically, in the end, basically a tar file, a tar file or an archive file that becomes the root file system that your program runs inside. And then there's, when you actually take that image and run it, it becomes a container. And a container is just a process, like any other process, but running in a special environment. As I said, it has its own root file system. It can't really see the computer's, like the host file system, except in ways that you specify. And you know, it can see the CPU, Linux kernel, and network. And kind of importantly, it thinks it has root power, but that only holds like kind of inside its environment. Okay, so I think the ways in which it can be useful for research are, this is what we'll see today, set up software without as much excruciating pain. The excruciating pain doesn't go away, but it is somewhat lessened, maybe, or at least changed its shape. And then, you know, a nice thing is then, once you've gone through the excruciating pain, you can share the results with your collaborators so that you can, you know, nominate one person in your collaboration to endure the pain, and then I'll benefit from it, ideally. You know, moving your analysis from a laptop to a computer cluster, and then another computer cluster, and then another computer cluster as you move jobs, or as you run out of power, or as things don't work, can sort of ease that pain. And then also, I think, you know, archive your setup for your own later use, like, how did I make the figures in that paper? Or what exactly, what was the setting of this parameter in my code? If it's, I think, it's saved in a Docker archive, then you're better able to answer those sorts of questions. And then also, I think it's starting to get used a fair bit as a way of publishing basically a software environment that would allow other people to reproduce your results. Okay. Sure. I'm deciding exactly when to leave this talk. I think Docker is most helpful basically when you, if you're in an all open source land, like if you're using open source libraries, with Faizan, we're doing some stuff that's using proprietary or licensed software, IDL, which is more of a pain. it's still possible, but especially if there's like basically a bunch of code you need or a bunch of different packages you need, and if some of them are kind of fussy to set up, you know, the Fortran 77 package that's been passed through generations of people and has some like weird make files and things you have to edit and all of that. And we'll see that in the example today, actually. So if, you know, those dependencies are sort of fussy and you find that on a new machine, none of the instructions really seem to work for your computer, then Docker can be a solution for that. And occasionally you run into packages where, you know, there's like really easy build instructions as long as you're using like a specific exact version of some distribution, probably 5 years old. and then, you know, Docker can sort of come to the rescue for those sort of situations. Okay. I think, you know, it's sort of more challenging if you, for graphics or interactive sort of things, sort of better for kind of scripty things. Okay, I'm gonna skip that. And now I'm gonna switch to doing some interactive, like demo style stuff. I did embiggen that earlier. Oh yeah. So if you haven't already, go to docker.com. Grab it, install it on your computer. So I actually forgot to look at this earlier, so I'm not entirely certain where to find it. Products, we want Docker community version. Nope, Docker desktop, there we are. Download desktop for Mac and Windows, sounds good. And I think at that point it makes you sign in to Docker Hub, or, you know, create an account if you don't have one already. Eventually you can get to downloading the Docker program itself. And that will, wow, it's fairly big, it'll take a while. I already have it installed, so I'm gonna cancel that. Does Anyone have Docker already installed? Okay. Okay. So we'll wait a bit then. Actually, I should have done this first, I guess. I know for next time, start you off with downloading the big file and then. Okay, I think while we're like waiting for that to install, I'm gonna start doing some demo kind of stuff. My windows. Okay. All right. So So once you get Docker installed on the Mac, at least it ends up having a little thing in your menu bar, and then you should have the Docker command line, like the Docker command available. So Docker has a bunch of options, but I'm gonna basically just launch into sort of how you start using it for the first time. Okay, so let me just do some magic. Okay. All right. So what you can see that. Is that okay, or should I make it bigger?
It's okay.
It's okay. Okay. You're in the back, so you're the best. Best one to ask. Okay, so I've typed docker run minus it ubuntu colon 18.04 bash. So this is saying I want to run interactively this image called ubuntu 18.04. And inside that image, I want to run the command bash. So when you run that the first time, you won't have Ubuntu 18.04 on your computer. So it'll go and fetch it from the internet. So it'll pull down a bunch of stuff. And but then sooner or later, you'll get to here. So then now what's going on? It's saying we're at root at some weird long random string in the root of the file system. Okay, so what this means is we're now sort of in a we're running inside this little environment. It thinks its host name is this random string. It thinks that we are the user root. Who am I? And it thinks that it's an Ubuntu system. So at this point, you can sorry, I forgot what I was going to do. I'm just going to quit that for a second. I'm going to hop back to my slides and see what I did in the little demo that I had before. I think nothing that interesting. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so apologize. I should have thought through more carefully what I was going to do exactly. I'm going to now jump, change gears again, and jump over to the EHT demo. So So I've gone to eventhorizontelescope.org under the four astronomers tab and said, what do you have for data products? And it turns out that they provide both some data snapshots and also some code snapshots. And the second one is supposed to be enough to basically reproduce some of the kind of key results from their papers. And specifically, they are giving us the three different imaging pipelines that they use to turn the Event Horizon Telescope observations into the black hole images. So I'm going to work on trying to get the first one, the DiffMap one, set up and running, just to kind of, just for kicks, to see if I can like make a black hole image. Okay, so they conveniently provide a little run.shell script that, if we look at it, downloads a data file, and then goes into each of the three directories, the diffmap, EHT imaging, another one, and runs a run.sh in each of those directories. So they're providing these three different methods, and this is a kind of top-level script that's going to go and run those three methods and make the images for each one. So in diffmap, the first one, it says, this is the script for imaging EHT data, requires Caltech's DiffMap software for image reconstruction version 2.5b or above. It can be obtained from blah, blah, blah. So, you know, this website is supposed to be like a place that allows you to reproduce the results, and the first thing it tells you to do is go and get some other code. So it's a little unfortunate. I'm glad that they put this up, but it's like the first thing it's told me to do is go get something else. Okay, fine, so I need to go find DiffMap. There's a link at the bottom. The link doesn't quite work, so edit the link. It's only like one of the most important observational results of the decade. And here's, here's the tar file. I'm going to save that. So I have that diffmap program, like bit of code. Do the usual thing, tar cf diffmap. And what have we got? There's a README. Copyright, general information. So, okay, right, you've maybe done this sort of, you've been through this sort of thing before, right? Perhaps. Okay, so to successfully install it, you need the following: a C compiler, a Fortran 77 compiler, pgplot, whatever that is, at version blah or above. Grab that from some other directory on Caltech. Like I was saying about deep dependency stacks and obscure dependency stacks. This is the sort of thing that one counters. Okay, and then, all right, so, and then the instructions continue to tell you to grab the code that you've already done, unpack it. Okay, installation instructions. Okay, this is great, right? Before running the configure script, you must edit it. Oh no, you know you're off to a world of hurt when you read that. Follow the instructions for what to change, probably only these couple of the variables. Once you've edited it, type configure operating system name dash compiler name. What is this? Okay, recognize the operating system compiler name. Pairs are listed at the top of the configure file. Okay, good. For a modern PC running Linux i486 GCC. That's some definition of modern, all right. Okay, so I'm on my Mac here. I'm going to try that. Okay, so here's the configure script. Okay, look it. I'm skimming. So at the top it says Intel, OS X GCC, Intel Mac computer running OS X using the GNU C compiler. That sounds like me. I'm gonna grab that one. So, and then go configure Intel OS X GCC, and then blah, it fails, right? Well, whatever.
Justin?
Yeah.
Where is the file?
Sorry, which one?
Installation instructions.
Okay, so it was.
Oh, the diff map. Okay.
Yeah. So this is within the diff map software product. Sorry, I'm sort of like reproducing my journey from earlier today. So I'm sorry if I'm like sort of going quickly reviewing the pain so that it will go by faster. Okay, so it was complaining that it couldn't find GCC4 and search for that. It says under Intel OS X GCC. It's trying to run GCC4 instead of just GCC. Fine, I'll edit that. Try it again. And then basically it just like, I'll cut to the chase and say that I tried to figure out what was going on here and couldn't. And basically it was like, well, these instructions just don't work for my computer. So I'm like, well, I'm stuck. I guess I don't get to make a black hole image today. But what if I try Docker? Okay, so instead of running it on my computer, I'm going to try running it on a different operating system that might have support for these tools, right? Okay, so let's see. So I'm gonna do it a way that's sort of not best practices, but is kind of pragmatic for this task. This is sort of like how I actually did this earlier today when I was thinking about this. So okay. So I'm gonna go. Like this again. So I'm gonna say, I just wanna start from like a fresh Ubuntu machine. I chose Ubuntu because it's a distribution I'm familiar with and I like. So an 18.04 is April from last year. So it's, and now, so I've started up, I've started up a fresh machine. And now I'm going to try to run this installation process on that machine instead. So first thing is going to be to grab the code. Oh, I don't have wget on this machine yet. Right? So you know how I said like you sort of have to build up the environment in which your program is going to run? When you start a fresh Ubuntu machine, it's sort of like bare. There's not really much there. It has a few basic commands, but not really much. So you end up kind of having to install a bunch of packages before you can really do anything. There are different, instead of asking for an Ubuntu machine, I could have asked for like a huge galaxy of different images that provide sort of different levels of software already installed, but I thought this is a pretty, like, this is a workflow that I actually use a fair bit. Okay, so I'm going to install wget. And it takes a bit. And then, meanwhile, I'm going to go and remind myself what the URL for that diffmap program is. Copy link location. And now I should be able to.
Wget.
Pardon me?
What is the command to install?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So I first had to do. Sorry. So I did an apt update. That's to get an update of what packages are available for Ubuntu. And then apt install wget.
Okay,
so. So now I can again extract that file. And now what did it say? It said configure Linux i486 GCC. Okay, right. Oh, GCC, not found. Okay, I guess we have to install GCC. Wants to install a bunch of other stuff, sure, fine. So right now it's installing the GCC, so it's installing the compiler.
Okay.
Yeah. So you know, you might think, oh, it doesn't seem like I'm much further ahead at this point. Hey, I've got my compiler installed, and look, it made it further than I made on my Mac. So we're making progress. It seems like we're making progress, maybe. And then in the instructions, I think it now told us to run make all, right? So that's make all. I'm going to try that. And then look, it's like, oh, make, not found. Oh, yeah, I need make too. Okay, make all. Okay, it's building stuff. Good. Okay, and then it gets up to a certain point, and now it's trying to run. Oh, it's trying to run the gFortran. It's building the Fortran parts of the code. Oh yeah, we need a Fortran compiler. I feel like, you know, in the Matrix where he's like, I know karate. It's like, oh, I need a gFortran compiler. Apt install gFortran. I know gFortran. Okay, gonna try make all again. seems to be getting further, or it's doing the same thing again. Okay, so it's gotten, look, it's gotten almost to the end. It's going G4, and it's trying to actually make the diff map executable, linking all that stuff. But it can't find, oh, that old PG plot library we heard about earlier, right? Oh, I'm like feeling a little bit nervous now. I'm like, oh, this is going to take me down a rabbit hole. And oh no, it can't find X11 and N curses. Like, here we go on like another on a 4-hour fishing expedition. So it turns out that Ubuntu has a package for ppgplot, which is great. So apt search ppgplot, that apt search sort of searches that package library to say, what do you have? And it's called, it's just called ppgplot5. So I'm going to apt install ppgplot5. Sure, install that. And then I'm going to skip a couple of these steps that you've sort of seen the pattern of already. Search directly for N curses. It's, what's it called? I think it's libncurses. libncurses5. Oh, it's already installed. We need the dev version. Maybe. Is it libx11? Let's make all right. Okay, I have to search for lowercase. Okay, so I should have, maybe I should have kept a running list of all the things I had to install. Hallelujah, it finished. Did it? It did finish, right? It's only a warning. It's fine. It's good. I have a diff map program. Okay, diff map. On. It seems to run, and it's, and you can tell that it's of a certain era because it's in some sort of like interactive prompt mode, and Control C doesn't quit it, and Control D doesn't quit it. Kill. There you go. Okay, so now I guess the next thing we need to do is grab that data file and actually run this thing. And I happen to know that this takes a while, so I'm going to get that going and then talk about how to like improve what we just did. Okay. Okay, so I'm sort of, we're kind of like popping up the stack of things that we actually wanted to do. So I think we've installed the diffmap program. And, okay, right. So what I should do actually is clone this whole GitHub repository, the Event Horizon Telescope 1, and clone it inside this container. Should also mute my, oh, I can't mute it. Okay, git clone, blah. Oh yeah, I don't have git. Ugh. exciting talk, right? Spending like so when you're working on Docker, you do spend a lot of time watching watching OS installs, basically. Seems to be a fact of life. Okay, so I now have that repository. Okay, right. And I can go run.sh. So first it's gonna go and first it's gonna go and download that data file, which it did already. And then it's gonna it's actually going into the, it's starting to run the image pipelines, right? It's gone into the diffmap directory. And then this diffmap script is failing because it wants this command expect. So, all right, fine. App install expect. Good. Wants to know our geographic area in which we live. Okay, fine. Okay, America, we're in North Dakota, New Salem. That's great, yeah, there we are. Okay, and try again. Oh, it's downloading it again. Okay, so it's actually trying to run the diffmap program, but we don't actually have it installed somewhere where the script can find it, so. Copy it into the local bin, and now we should be able to run. Yeah, so we can run diffmap. Can't get out of it, have to kill it. Download the data file again. Okay, and now finally, this is actually the code running. It's doing a clean, it's like printing a gajillion lines of output. It's running. Okay, that's gonna take a little while to finish. So why don't I think now I should say how we just pretend that we're the EHT collaboration and we're trying to make this easier for other people to do, right? So what I'm gonna try to do is basically build a Docker container that would let somebody get up to this point without doing what we just did, right? So that somebody could just basically, instead of where I said Docker run Ubuntu 18.04, they could say like Docker run EHT this data product, which would be a pretty nice, you know, way of distributing their software. So, so the way we do that is I'm going to hop back to my computer. I'm just going to make a new directory in which to work. So I'm going to call it a EHT demo. And edit a file called Dockerfile with a capital D. It's a convention to call it that. And so a Docker file basically gives build instructions for how to build a Docker container. So it'll give instructions that'll end up being very similar to the things I typed by hand. But it becomes a script that you can then use to build a container. You can share with other people, or it also kind of serves as documentation for what you did. It's sort of like the recipe of how to build up this environment. So one of my arguments about why Docker is good for science is that even when like the Docker company or this containerization or technology doesn't exist anymore, this Docker file is a list of instructions that says, it gives fairly precise instructions for how to build up the environment you use. You know, at some point it won't be runnable anymore because Ubuntu won't exist and Docker won't exist and all that. You know, like, that infrastructure will all be gone, but it'll still be kind of written, fairly readable instructions of what you did. So even if, you know, even if it does nothing else for you, I think it's helpful in that regard. Okay, so the Docker file format basically has a bunch of instructions. And these are, you can find the documentation for them on docs.docker.com. And then there's like a bunch of there's a bunch of documentation on sort of different parts of the system, but there's, oh, that's not the one I want. It's the Docker file reference, I think is what it's called. Yeah. So this sort of gives the instructions or the like manual for how these files are written. So one of them is from, which says which image you want to start from. We started from Ubuntu 18.04. And then there's a, you can do a bunch of run commands that basically are like the commands you would type in. So we started out with a apt update. And then you can go run apt install. And then I'm going to hop over here and hopefully pause that and look at my history and gather up all the things I installed. Hopefully. And write them and copy them over. So okay, I need a wget. I'm gonna actually steal this wget line for later. And now instead of sort of installing them one package at a time, I'm just gonna make a big list. So I also needed make, I needed gfortran, I needed pglot5, and curses5dev, livx11, and what else? That's maybe all. We'll find out. Okay.
I guess it's libx11 minus dev.
Oh, it's dev. Oh, yeah, you're right. Thank you. Okay, so let's just do that to start.
X is uppercase.
It's lowercase in this. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, and we also needed git later. Oh, and expect as well. Okay, so then you know, basically, once we have this, actually, you know what? I'm going to leave that open, and open another terminal down below. New window. Begin. Okay. And this is the HD demo. Okay, so now to tell Docker to actually run all those commands and build the image for it, go Docker build. And then you have to say which directory to run in. And it'll, so usually Docker build dot. To look for, and it'll read a file called Dockerfile in the current directory. Okay, so now is basically doing exactly the same stuff that we just did, except trying to install it all at once. But then it gets down here and it says, do you want to continue, yes or no? This is not, it's not running interactive at this point, so that just fails. So then, there's a little like kind of standard workaround there is to add to apt install, you add a minus y that just says answer yes to any questions. and we'll run this again. It's just like a good policy as long as you trust the other person to not ask you anything you wouldn't say yes to.
But it's just a Docker container. So what?
Yeah, exactly. That's right. It can only, right. Okay, I'm gonna keep running my, oh no. Did it finish? No.
I think it's just downloading from a different place.
No, sorry, I just mean, I wanted to restart my, my diffmap thing.
Oh.
But I think it failed. It didn't like being suspended. Okay, so, Oh no. Something failed there, so that's not good.
Specifying that you live in Canada?
Maybe.
I don't know. Shouldn't.
It shouldn't matter. Maybe it. Oh yeah, it's saying it's not finding an or something. Okay. Well, so one possible thing that could be going wrong is that we sort of have to, we want to rerun apt update maybe. And so the Docker build command is somewhat smart, and it remembers all of the commands that it ran and saves its work after each one. So as a result, if you actually want something to, if you want to rerun a command, like if you want to sort of force it, there is probably some command line to give Docker run or Docker build, but you can also just go like change the command in some way that doesn't have an actual effect, like, you know, echo.
You can just add a space between apt and update.
Yeah, but it's more fun to say, you know, and add a little command that says, yeah, really do it. And so as while we're waiting for that, I can tell you some like technical details. So each of these, after each of these lines, Docker saves its work. And can resume later. But one of the catches, I guess, is that means that anything, any changes you've made to the file system with that command are saved. So in this case, we downloaded a bunch of like the list of all of the packages available in Ubuntu. And you don't necessarily need to, you know, you don't actually need to send that to your friend to reproduce this result. So often in the wild, you'll see Docker files that use a lot of that sort of pack a lot of commands into one run. And that's because they're trying to reduce the number of layers. And they'll often also do things like where they try to clean up as much as possible after each step. So a thing you might see is like, I'm not actually going to do it because it'll make it rerun it. But you'll see things like, you do run update and apt install and apt clean, and then maybe like something where you remove the package files or something. And that's done basically in order to keep the file sizes down so that when you then later try to send it up to the Docker Hub or share it with a friend, you don't have to send like a huge amount of stuff. Okay. It looks like it's trying, what is it doing? It's asking us which time zone we're in again. I'm not entirely sure why that, this it actually seems to be interactive, and I'm not sure why that is. Or it's just about to, or it's failing. Okay, that's annoying. What's that?
What package is this in?
This is in
TZ.
Yeah, time zone data. you know, somebody needs it. that's annoying. So I actually didn't entirely check how to fix that. So I'm gonna show you like overly honest methods. Docker. Easy data, non-interactive. Yeah. Avoiding user interaction with PC data when installed. Yeah, that sounds right. When installing something in a Docker container. Okay, good.
The solution is further down. You don't need to read the question.
Yeah. Sometimes you do.
Non-interactive.
Yeah, okay, so right.
Right? But is that an environment variable or is that?
That, yeah, that's an environment variable. So you can either go, let's do some things, learning opportunity, right? So you can set environment variables along with your run commands. Let's put it after that because we don't. Let's install everything except v, but we don't know who's.
Are you sure that equal sign should not be there?
I'm somewhat sure. Okay. So, you know, this is also. There's some trial and error involved in this process as well. Okay, I'm just going to grab the rest of the things from my history from when I ran it before. Okay, so another thing I guess it's worth pointing out is that each run command starts out back in some working directory. I think it's by default, it's just the root. So as a result, you might like sometimes you. So here we, at this point, I've in the Docker file, I've downloaded that code and I might want to extract it. So cf diffmap and then run. You might think, run cd, I don't know, it's called UVF something. UVF diffmap. And then we had to do configure. You see, like that. Except each of these runs sort of starts over in the working directory, so the cd doesn't actually carry over from one to the next. So one option is to set this variable called workdir, where you can say, instead of starting at root, I want to start at slash UVF diffmap. Or another option is to combine these into a single command using this and. One thing is, you'd really like to have each of those on a separate line, but the Docker file format is kind of finicky, so it doesn't allow multi-line things unless you put a slash at the backslash at the end of the line. So that sort of continues it onto the next line. Okay, so it actually ran, finally installed. I don't know what time zone it thinks we're in. Don't really care, honestly. And it's successfully built up and that container and saved it with that tag. That is, so if we wanted, we could now go docker run minus it this command. And we would be inside this container at this point. You know, we have, I think we have the diffmap code with us, but it's not extracted or anything else. Okay, so now we can carry on.
How big is that file?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. The image that's been built up to the.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. We.
Can we look at it?
Yeah. There's. They're sort of they're kind of hidden away. Let's see if I can find them. Docker image list, maybe? Okay, that's kind of big. Let's have a look. Okay, so I think, it's that one maybe? So it's probably the one at the top of the list. So it's that image ID created 2 minutes ago, size 368 megs. So it's okay, right? They do tend to grow pretty big because you end up, you know, you install a pile of stuff and then you often want to add, you know, data files or whatever else. And so they can grow fairly big. It's true. Okay, I'm going to now continue on with that Docker build because I copied over a couple more of the commands. So thankfully, it didn't have to do all that reinstallation again. It's now run the configure. So that's finished. And then I think instead of, okay, I am going to actually set the work here and then go run. It was make all, right? I think. Let's build that.
The second time that you built it, it had a different identifier. So does it save both the previous version and the new version on your computer?
Yeah, so it'll save all of the steps. Like each of the lines in that file is a separate. The files that are added to the file system in that step are saved as a separate file. And then basically the whole Docker file is like the stack of all of the changes you've made.
But I mean, can you make the list of?
Yeah, sure, of course. What was it, Docker image list? Let's make the slide again.
I see, okay, so there's a newly made one, so it's a different identifier, but it replaced the old one.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I think it's because I didn't save it or anything, so I guess it's, yeah, I'm not sure. Okay, and then, so that finished, right? Okay, so now I'm gonna do this step. I'm gonna look back through my history again. Oh yeah, do the git clone for actually pulling in the Event Horizon Telescope repository. Actually, I should do those in separate ones because that's going to take a while.
So does the work directory command, does it move you into that directory or?
Yeah, it moves you into that directory for all subsequent run commands. Okay, so wrong. Pardon? Yeah. I don't know what happened. Oh yeah, right, we had to copy diffmap into somewhere useful, right? Okay, so then we go run cd diffmap / user local bin. There. Try that again. Okay, so then there's diffmap actually running in our container. So actually, if we were doing this, if we're in the shoes of EHT, we wouldn't actually like run the command probably, or maybe we would. You would. So here's. I guess I can show you another couple of options in the Docker file. So you can give a default command, and it's called, I think the command is called cmd. So then, so when you do a Docker build, it doesn't actually run that command. But if I now go and Docker run that container, it'll run that command as a default. No, it won't. the work dir not set? Maybe it doesn't. Yeah, maybe it doesn't hold the work dir. Oh, no, I have to rebuild it. And now it's got a new name. Okay, so here's another thing. it's kind of annoying to have these like random strings that you have to copy and paste all the time. So when you do a build, you can say, oh, I want to give it a tag, so minus t eht-demo. So then it builds it and gives it the tag eht-demo colon latest. Now you can just go docker run minus it eht-demo. Oh, what's going on?
I think in your work dir, one of your work dir commands, you said work dir cd and then the directory name.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, thanks. Let's see, so can we do it like this? This is a little too real, right? Okay, build. And I see we're at the hour. I'm close to wrapping it up. Okay, so now if we run HG demo. Yeah, so then it's done the right thing. Okay, good. Phew. But then, yeah, okay, right. So we can't seem to. Can we not quit it? Okay. It takes a bunch of hammering on Control-C to actually quit it. But if we don't want to run the default one, we can just say run the command we actually want to run. So bash in this case, or whatever. Okay, good. Right, so now if you were, okay, let's continue being EHT collaboration. So one of the nice features of Docker is that you can share your work. So now, and there's the way this happens is actually like pretty slick. So now if I go Docker build, and instead of tagging it eht-demo, I'm going to tag it with my Docker Hub username. So I'm dstn/eht-demo. So that build will finish because it's just renaming the thing it already has. And now if I go Docker push, it's going to send that to Docker Hub. So you can see it's each of these basically corresponds to one of the lines in our Docker file. It doesn't have to send the, and it cheats. Anytime it finds one that sort of has everything it already needs, it won't send it. So I apparently did basically the same thing earlier today. So it's going to cheat and not send those upstream. It doesn't have to send Ubuntu 18.04 because that exists on Docker Hub. So then it shouldn't take us that much longer until we're actually pushing this to the cloud. Do, 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 do. Okay, good. So now your instructions to your friend or whatever can be, oh, if you want to, have you tried reproducing the EHG results? All you have to do is go docker run dstn/eht-demo. And it's there, it's running GIFMap. And if I hadn't done any of this stuff on my computer already.
I downloaded, something's wrong.
Really?
Access denied.
What?
On the push, did it finish?
It did finish. I can't actually kill. Can't seem to kill diffmap. It's so obnoxious. Oh look, it's a learning opportunity. Let's see. So, I want to find. Oh. So you just have to kill. Okay. There it is. It didn't work.
I can't seem to.
Huh. It's supposed to work. Let me go to. Let's see.
Have a response from daemon pull access denied for Dustin EHT demo.
Huh.
May require a Docker login. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Right. Sorry. So you probably do need a Docker login. All right.
Oh, that's all I need to do. Very good.
And then it's pulling it down?
No. Requesting access to the resources.
That is weird. What's going on? Because it's supposed to, it says it's public.
Oh, there's an N missing.
Ah, yeah.
There you go. It's helping everything.
Okay, good. Right, and then it'll, you know, it should start running that code, which is nice. So then, you know, basically, you now have a two-line instruction for how to reproduce the HT results that don't involve, like, trying to build Fortran code. Okay, that's good. So I argued that another reason that Docker is useful is that you can move from one computing environment to another. So I'm just going to do quickly how to run on like a cluster or on Singularity and on Symmetry. All right, so now it turns out that that Docker, because it has to do all of this like manipulating the environment that a program runs in, requires a lot of power, and usually isn't installed on like clusters because of security issues. Instead, there's this program called Singularity that basically does the same thing. That it allows you to run Docker containers on, you know, supercomputers or whatever. So we have Singularity installed. Module detail. Singularity. Yeah, the default's probably fine. And I forgot to look up what the what exactly the command is. Singularity build. Example. Okay, so there's all right, it's like this. So Singularity build. So it Singularity has its own little format for container files, so you basically have to like Singularity build the Docker file into its little format. So that's going to be, I'm gonna call it PHG demo dash, I think they normally call it SIF, and then it's Docker blah blah /PHG demo. Okay, so that's then pulling down a Docker container, so that'll take a minute or two. You can see that like some of the, these are the different layers, so some of them are, you know, 20 megabytes, 8 megabytes, whatever it is. An SIF file. And now we should be able to, hopefully, Singularity. Challenge is actually spelling Singularity. Exec. HTML. If we just exec it. Nope. Requires at least two args. Bash. Ah. Right, I remember this. Okay. Singularity is slightly confusing. It has some nice features, but it is slightly confusing. So what actually happened there was I thought it did nothing because it just gave me my prompt back, but actually it was running inside the container, and that was inside the container. What I like to do to remind myself of that is, you can tell it what hostname to imagine it has. I go --- hostname container. So then it says, then my prompt says, you're dlang. Oh, notice I'm not root. In Singularity, you run as yourself. And it says, you're in the container, bonehead. Okay, so some other nice features of Singularity are it does know like your home directory exists and is readable. We also have the, I think the modules are available. No, they're not. But GPFS is mounted and available and writable. So that's a nice feature. I think, yeah, so then, and then also all the stuff we had, so our, there's our DHT directory we had before. So it also appears that Singularity doesn't by default run that, the command that you give as the default command to run. So if we wanted to run it here, we would have to just go with my hand. Oh no. Okay, I think I see what's going on. Inside the Singularity container, I think it's not writable.
Yes, because it's not root. Yes.
Or, yeah, something like that.
You need
like
to mount the file system where it then can write through.
Yeah. Okay. So can we, let's see, can we copy that to my GPFS directory? Oops. Ah, and then we're running diffmap on Singularity. Ah. I mean, on symmetry, in Singularity, all the things. Okay, I'm gonna leave it there. Oh, except that if you let this run for like 10 minutes, it'll make a bunch of files. And if you, here's a nice feature.
It's not going to make files, it's going to complain that Python 2 isn't there.
No, that's it going on to the next imaging method.
Okay.
I think if you go into the diffmap directory, it does actually have some files. And one of them has the suffix .fits. And if you open that up in like a fits viewer, like a DS9 or whatever, it's this lovely image that everybody knows and loves. Or something like it, the famous black hole image. So hooray, we reproduced the EFG results. In a way that we can share with our friends, right? Okay, so that's my sales pitch for Docker, I guess. Thank you. questions, complaints?
The Singularity instructions, are they on the website for symmetry?
I believe they are.
Okay.
It's possible they're up to date. Symmetry docs. Singularity. Yeah, so we have a few docs on running Singularity on symmetry system.
I had one question related to the Docker file.
Yeah.
So you have these work dir things throughout, but then you updated things in a nonlinear fashion. So you edited one in between the two. I know it does skip commands some things that it's already done, but clearly it doesn't skip all the things that it's already done. Otherwise,
yeah, that's right. It only
work directory.
Yeah, that's right. So it's like starts from the top and skips everything that hasn't changed, and then as soon as it hits something that has
so
changed,
it basically always will execute a work dir. Just
is it?
In case.
Okay.
Right, things below it need to use that work directory.
Like if you change the work dir, definitely, yeah, it'll rerun everything below. I mean, in general, if you touch something, everything below that will get rerun. So in development, you'll often see like a bunch of stuff and then like fixing it at the end. Like, oh, I don't want to have to, you know, I need one more app. I need to apt install another package, but I don't want to add it back up to my original list because then it'll download everything again. So, you know, writing Docker files tends to be this kind of iterative approach, and then you like kind of clean up at the end to take advantage of the caching. Yeah, so then I guess another, there's getting to be this whole ecosystem around containers and whatever. So a thing you can do is if you host your Docker file on GitHub, you can tell Docker Hub to look at GitHub, and when there are changes to your Docker file, to rebuild it automatically and update your image on Docker Hub. So it's kind of neat. You know, there's some neat like stuff going on there where you can take advantage of the fact that there's buzz around this.
So how about if I make a Docker file right now, some years later?
Yeah.
I do it again.
Uh-huh.
All the library files are updated. How about at that time it doesn't work? How can we?
Yeah, that
the old version of the order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that remains it's a problem. It's still a risk. So actually, I should show you. This is not. Oh, it's still running.
I'll make it
soon. So there's a couple things. So Ubuntu has these, like some of their releases they designate as long-term support or LTS releases. And there they guarantee support for like, I don't know, 5 years maybe, something like that. So 18.04 I think is one of those, is one of the long-term releases. So you know, at least for 5 years you're sort of guaranteed that it'll continue running. As in, you can rebuild the Docker container or rerun those instructions and they'll still work. Even after that point, if you have the Docker file, the Docker container, or you know, if Docker Hub still exists at that point, then that file that I uploaded, like the name dstn/ehtdemo, that will still run, like that will still have the code even if Ubuntu disappeared.
This is the .sif file?
The Docker equivalent of that. Yeah, the singularity was the SIF was the singularity version, but yeah, the Docker files are, I don't actually know what format they are or where they live, but you know.
Oh, I think I may have missed. So we made the Docker file, and then how do we get the singularity version of that?
Oh, my thing finished. I can't remember where I, it was here. So what did I do? I did,
You're in the container.
Yeah, I'm in the container. Of course I'm in the container. So what did I do? I did a singularity build, the output file name, and then docker:// just demo. Oh yeah, so another like, I swear I'm nearly done. So one thing that putting on our hats as the EHG team again, the first thing this run.sh script did is went off and downloaded a file. You might think, you know what we should do? We should package the file with the Docker container. That way we'll have the code and the data together. and it'll be, that sort of makes it more reproducible and like more enduring. So you can do that. And the way to do it is, so I would, you could go into the into that run.sh script and like find the file or whatever, but basically in the Docker file you can say copy a file from my current directory, like on the build host on my laptop, and copy it into the container at like let's put it in, you know, in that directory. So then so then if I Docker build it, it'll copy that file into the container. And then, you know, we could edit the run.sh script and not have to download that file, or like maybe check if the file exists and not download it if it already exists. So then, you know, now we've something. Why didn't that work? I'm not gonna figure that out. Trust me that I should be able to figure out how to copy a file into the Docker container. And then, I mean, personally, I think that, so if I were the EHG collaboration, that's how I'd do it, I think, because I want it, it's, the file's not that big. And like, the idea here is to like, to be able to reproduce a result. So I think it would be good practice to like, try to package up the data along with the file. So then I think that also is good for reproducibility, and you can sort of give everybody the environment of, you know, both this kind of annoying to build diffmap program and the scripts they need and the data files they need, sort of all packaged up together. Okay, really done this time. And next week is, I think next week is Google Cloud Platform stuff, cloud computing. Perhaps. See you then. Okay, thank you.